All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Taxi Squad podcast. Today is Tuesday, February 6th, and we are back with your Week 17 weekend preview. So as our boy Craig would say, Jay, start up those fares and let's get into it. Thank you always for listening. My name is Matty K, and here with me, keeping the van cab warm and toasty all season long, are Jay and Alan. Fellas, how you doing tonight?
Dude, just hit up Michael Bublé's stash. I'm ready for light speed.
I think I've joined it on Alan in this literal taxi squad cab of go Vegas Golden Knights tonight against the Oilers.
That's right. Stuart Skinner ain't
I think
shit.
Everybody at some point's cheering for that. That's right. And Alan, I can't believe that Biebs wore your coat to the All-Star game. That was supposed to be a one of one, my man. A one of one. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. We are missing a familiar voice behind the mic tonight. Our main man, Craig, is battling through a mid-season flu or bubonic plague or something that's ripping through the house. So unfortunately, we had to place him on short-term IR, retroactive to early last week. So certainly wishing our boy a speedy recovery. Although, fellas, I hear he is using the downtime to work on his European last name pronunciations. So when our man gets back, his Luostarinens and Puljujarvis are going to be money in the bank. So before we get into today's episode, if you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate a like and subscribe on any of our social channels, your podcast streaming service of choice, YouTube, Twitter/X. Our handles are in the show notes, and our Discord community. Active 2,500 members. We're talking all things life and fantasy hockey and everything in between. Come on, check us out and say hi. So this is typically the point in the episode where we take the van cab around the league for some quick news and notes. And our first stop is going to be in Winnipeg, fellas, with Mark Scheifele being activated from IR. So he goes right back into his optimal line one, power play one deployment, a must roster player. And Winnipeg has that fantastic schedule down the stretch. So, I mean, obviously, guys, if we're a Mark Scheifele owner, he is finding your way in the lineup, even though he has that dreaded C-only deployment. Nonetheless, great to see Scheifele back. And definitely, if you are a team that's going to need that production down the stretch, some of the bubble teams that we talked about on the previous episode, then you are definitely going to look forward to Winnipeg's schedule. And hopefully what Scheifele is going to bring us. So next stop here is going to be over to Philly. We got Owen Tippett back in the lineup tonight. He is playing with Sean Couturier and Cam Atkinson. I guess that'd be the shot on goal line for sure. I mean, all three of those guys like to rip the puck, so that should be quite interesting. I need to see how the Flyers are going to handle everything that's been going on around that team before I hop back in with both feet. I mean, geez, they lost five straight. But going into the All-Star break, they've got goalie roulette going on. They've got the ever-present torts factor going on. Like, fellas, anything with Philly that gives you confidence that they're going to sort of stabilize the ship here and kind of come back out. And I mean, they had a pretty comfortable lead where they were before. If I just take a quick peek at the standings right now, like they're third in the Metro, certainly not the lead that they had before. And they are a wild card team.
It's like, I don't know how I feel about Ersson holding it down.
That's what I mean. Like, it was so much nicer when Ersson was, like, the backup that kind of worked his way up and outshone the star. Now it's, we really need this guy, and I'm not quite as comfortable with...
Cal Peterson ain't it.
That's right.
It kind of feels, like, different as well. Like, when an upstart... start with something to prove as opposed to now you're just given the keys to the city. The early signs make it appear as if Ersson might prefer the former role less so the latter.
Well, I mean, I always tend to forget about this sometimes too. Like before these guys made it to the NHL, They all played for, you know, club teams, university teams, pro teams, all the teams they played out there. And they were the guy. They were the stud. They probably played as many games as a human could possibly play. So somehow I don't think your brain just loses that when you come to the NHL. But man, I really hope he finds his form. He started to look a little shaky over these last handful of games. So Philly's certainly going to need the net to stabilize. Let alone a little bit more success. The power plays at least turned it around a little bit lately. We were talking all year about how they were literally dead last in the NHL. And they have recently started to convert a little bit more over their last, you know, 8 or 10 games. They're up in the 25% range in terms of conversion. So they're not leading the league, but they certainly aren't in the basement of the league. So the universe has to balance itself out. So they swapped one problem with another problem. And I guess that is the Philly way. So, not really fantasy relevant news, fellas, but certainly something that's through the league news circuit with Yevgeny Kuznetsov entering the NHL's player assistance program. So I really caught news of this with the clip that was circulating through Twitter with Spencer Carberry, who's the coach for the Capitals. He's talking about Kuznetsov obviously being away from the team, and he kind of referenced the old name for the program, the substance abuse program, I think he called it. It was just a really super cringy moment. I don't think he's a bad human. I just think he probably would like to rephrase that moment in front of all of those cameras, because it certainly doesn't, you know, help the player deal with whatever it is he's dealing with. I know they don't have a lot of information when these types of things happen, so he's probably a little bit in the dark as well. But unfortunately for Kuznetsov, it is the second time he's been in that program. In 2019, he was suspended for 4 years, actually, from IIHF competition for a positive drug test after the 2019 World. So all in all, like we mentioned, not overly fantasy relevant at this point in his career, but for his sake, and he's a human with a family, I hope he's getting some help, because these are certainly problems that money doesn't fix. That man's made a lot of money in his life, but that's not going to help him working through that. So on to hopefully different note here with some storylines in the league. We had a signing in Pittsburgh with Pool Party himself. Jussi Puljujärvi signed a 2-year deal with the Pens. Guys, is this fantasy relevant really at all for us at this point? Like, we just talked about the Pens' futility.
I mean, right now he's projected third line with Ricky Rack and Lars Eller. So I would say not there, but maybe if something happens to Brian Rust, Riley Smith goes out again and he's next man up on the right wing. Yeah, certainly. Then he would be fantasy relevant.
I mean, also at the same time, you kind of wonder if we may have simply seen this before with even better talent back in Edmonton days, right? If you kind of, well, I don't know, I'm almost sounding like a party pooper here, but if you couldn't do it with McJesus, do we really think Crosby is the one fix-all? It's possible. It's entirely possible that, you know, it's softer passes.
Did you see the way Bieber looked at him? Did you see the way Bieber looked at him in that stall? Crosby can fix anybody's career. I think this is the third or fourth reincarnation of Puljujärvi's career. So I don't exactly think this is something that's going to be overly fantasy relevant, other than, like we just mentioned, that Pittsburgh power play has been pretty brutal. And who knows, the way that they rotate players through, just trying to find a combo that works, maybe that vortex will pull him into some sort of relevance for like a short period of time. But as you mentioned, they did shake up the top PP yesterday. I believe you said earlier, just coming in, they've got 2 power play goals tonight in the game. So
one from each unit.
Okay. So either way, that's moving in the right direction over their last month. So heading into this game tonight, their power play was 2 for 30, which is a cool 6.7%. And that makes them DFL in the entire league, fellas. They're dead fucking last in the entire NHL in terms of power play conversion over that period. And that is not going to get it done when you're 10th in the East. They're 5th in the Metro. I mean, this is with Crosby being amazing this year. Whatever you thought Sid was going to do this year, he's done more. Gensel has basically delivered, maybe ever so slightly underperformed, but basically Gensel is shots, goals, power play points, and some game-winning goals if your league counts that. But Malkin has really been a big meh for me this year, and the rest of the team, including 65, has been very forgettable. And I can only imagine what cashing those checks feels like. Sorry, signing those checks feels like. I'm sure cashing them feels just great. But signing those checks has got to just be... You could probably hear the grinding coming from the top floor, from like five floors down. And in Dubas' first year there too. So, I mean...
Not a good look, man.
Well, I'm intrigued to see what they do at the deadline, you know, because everybody knows the situation that they're in with that core. And nobody wants to see them move, but, you know, I don't think anybody's signing up for a rebuild either. So it'll be really interesting to see what Pittsburgh does down the stretch. It would start with showing a bit of a pulse and getting on a tiny bit of a run here. It'd be great to see the Pens as net buyers. I don't know what they're going to buy with, magic beans or, you know, equity right. in the building or something. Because
Jake Gensel.
Exactly. They're going to have a hallway full of banana peels for the third and fourth liners going down the hall and just be like, if somebody happens to land on long-term IR, because I don't know how they're going to get that done, but I think some help's got to come in from outside the room in Pittsburgh.
I am going to say, looking at the standings, I do sometimes wonder if they are unlucky in terms of variance. Nobody else with their differential looks anywhere close or near them in terms of their predicament. But yeah, you look at them right now, 12 points off the top of the Metro. Where are they hanging in terms of a playoff spot? They'd be chasing the Red Wings, and they'd be chasing, I guess, the Isles? I don't think the Penguins... I wouldn't put it past the Penguins that they are necessarily likely to miss the playoffs, like especially given their games in hand, especially given, for example, some of the teams that are chasing, like Philly is really going to need, like Philly was already a leaning on a goaltender playing well situation, and now it's shifted from Carter Hart to Samuel Ersson. I really think the Flyers, you could probably say, are nailed on odds on favorites to possibly limp out and slip out. Like, Konechny's and Tippett would really have to step up and be way more consistent producers. Well, Konechny would simply need to continue being consistent. Tippett would probably need to up his production, and then they would need some positive variance as well to work their way in terms of goaltending. I think the Penguins can probably take the Flyers' spot. If they can, you know, take some of those points and wins in hand. But really look at that goal differential. Like, what part of the Penguins roster and lineup is really the part that's, like, severely underperforming? Like, is it really just the power play, which came alive tonight?
Well, even just, like, the number of goals they've scored. Like, they're a bottom third to bottom quarter team in terms of, like, total scoring. So, the team as a whole, like, if you just... I mean, if anybody pulled up their fantasy app and just sorted the team by goals, it's like Crosby, Gensel, I think Malkin's got 15 or 16, and then that's it. There's nobody else. There's nobody in like above single digits. So I guess you could say that gives them contributions, but it'd be nice to, you know, there's teams that have 6, 7, 8 guys that have, you know, that level of depth. So for them, I just think they need more. They just need more out of that offense. They need more out of that power play. They need more out of 2.5 players. They just do. You're not going to go any. It's not basketball. Speaking of a team that's on a hell of a streak and has got all cylinders going is obviously the Edmonton Oilers. They are 16 games and counting into this streak, and lost in all of that is they are playing some tremendous defense as a team, fellas. Their last 9 games, I guess over their last month, they've played 9 games. They've allowed 11 goals combined, which is like 1.2 per game, which is pretty remarkable considering where this team was in October and November. Terms, I think, on some of these podcasts were tire fire, dumpster fire, any other type of fire. That was Edmonton. And yet, you know, they bang off 10% of the season where they allow 1 goal a game. So make that make sense. Yeah, I'll channel my Craig. Make that make sense.
Oh, man, it is. I definitely was one of those individuals that called out the Oilers as official pretenders, not contenders. And January 2024 has me being very quiet on the Oilers front. I don't think they'll win out for the remainder of the season. I can probably hang my hat that they're not going to win 30 straight games from now until the end of the season. But they... And especially captained by Connor McDavid, they look locked, loaded, and ready. I think I think they are playing not to set regular season records, but really with a zeal and fire for April and May heading into June. That is a scary team. The hottest team in the league by far.
Yeah, I think scary is a good word there. I was talking to somebody over the past weekend about, you know, just realistic chances. And it just comes down to sometimes that basic, like, who would you be scared to play against? And I don't think I can name a team in the East that I would really consider scary. Boston might be the closest thing to a scary team, but I think that's just because they're in a sea of not scary teams. So they look the scariest. So, but you look out in the West, you know, there's a handful of teams there that, are really playing great hockey, and they play well. They raise their level of competition against each other. It's going to be really exciting to see. Like we mentioned, like, how could Edmonton go on a run like that? And then you look at Vancouver beside them making up such little ground over an entire month. And, it speaks to how great the Canadian teams are all doing right now for the most part, which is wonderful to see. This leads us into kind of a main topic that we're going to get into tonight. So we are going to spend some time towards the end of this episode hitting into a bit of this weekend's preview, the schedule, a bit of strategy around some streamers, some back-to-backs, etc. But before we get into that, we haven't really had a chance to dig into some of these old players that have now moved to some new destinations. We're not going to spend a great deal of time overanalyzing a couple of these trades because they've been out in the hockey universe for a number of days now, but they are having some immediate fantasy impact on rosters and on games tonight, starting with the first trade here. So let's get into that, fellas.
Yeah, biggest trade so far this trade season is Elias Lindholm to Vancouver, and then Calgary receives a koozie, big koozie in return, and some prospects and picks, but the fantasy relevant parts are Elias Lindholm to Vancouver, koozie to Calgary. Looks like practice, and then even tonight, Lindholm was on line one, power play one. He had two goals, and then Kuzi is also in Calgary's line one, which I think we all kind of assumed Kadri would be the 1C, but it looks like they're running Huberto, Sharangovich, and Kuzi on that top line, and Kuzi also on top power play. He had a power play goal tonight. It was the opening goal of the game. And again, I'm throwing it out there. I wonder if this kind of gets Huberto going, not at the glamorous 110 point pace, but maybe better than 50 this season.
Yeah, 70 point guy down the stretch.
Yeah, early overreactions too, right? Kadri, even if he's not getting power play one, or not power play one, sorry, even if he's not the line one center, three assists tonight. My goodness, it is starting to look like trading Elias Lindholm and receiving Kuzmenko. This might be a win-win.
Not so scary Boston.
This might be a win-win situation here for all teams.
I mean, well, let's be real with Kuzi. Anywhere he was going to go was probably going to be a win for him, right? He just wasn't playing hockey the way Tockett wanted them to. And yeah, there were teams out there I'm sure would have loved to get him other than Calgary.
Well, and from a fantasy perspective, which is, you know, really kind of the primary lens we're looking at these players through, is Kuzmenko becomes a lot more fantasy relevant. He might not, you know, become a core member of your team, but he becomes way more fantasy relevant than he was at any point during this season. And Lindholm also notches up just because of the deployment that he has. He's been a great player, and he's shown, you know, 80 plus points ceilings multiple times in his career. Now he's playing with an elite top six in the league, and he can kind of interchange in terms of roles and responsibilities with that club. So it's going to be really exciting to see. But I mean,
and hopefully if he sticks on the wing, Yahoo reacts faster than normal and gives him that wing eligibility.
I would really like that flexibility if they would do that. We'll put a plug in for Lindholm and his eligibility. But no, this could be the first perfectly altruistic trade for teams in the same division, which just makes your head hurt sometimes. But
what was Lindholm's cap-friendly situation? Is it expiring at the end of 25 or 24? So is this a short-term rental?
The end of the season. I believe he's UFA after the season.
So this is functionally a short-term rental for the Canucks to push hard for this season, right?
But I feel like with all they gave up, especially one of those prospects is apparently a very high-rated D-man. I assume with that package, they intend to re-sign him. I don't know with what money, because they got to re-sign PD too.
Well, I was going to say, I think, yeah, there's definitely the we're going for it this year, but there's also the side story of this year was a prove-it year for the organization, to Kuzmenko, to release, or sorry, to Elias Pettersson, to say that, you know, we want to commit to you. They know, the player knows that they want to sign him. He wanted to see the commitment from the organization, and I think from the team around him, that this is going to be, you know, a quick turnaround and a team that can win. And for them to go from where they were last year to where they are now is fantastic in terms of his odds of re-signing that deal. So I think if you're the front office of that club, yes, Lindholm makes you better now. And better now is good for your fortunes, you know, obviously into the playoffs, but it's really good for our fortunes of re-signing Pettersson. So I like the overlap of those two
and teams. Further overlap with what you're describing before with scary teams, Matty K. It's so true when it comes to teams that you look at, pause, and think are super duper scary. Of course, the Edmonton Oilers pop out first, but my goodness, the Vancouver Canucks, it's starting to look as if those four teams at the top just kind of running away slowly at the top of the division. Well, actually, I guess five teams. I totally blanked over the Vegas Golden Knights, but yeah, it looks like the Avs, the Stars, the Oilers and the Canucks are, it really feels like they're going to duke it out. And I don't know, anything that comes out of the West, it's going to feel like lions against kittens in the East. Maybe the literal cats, the actual Florida Panthers, like maybe they are the one team that could possibly also have all those pieces that are pretty scary too. But aside from that, yeah, I agree. The East is kind of like a declawed kitten in comparison to the West this 23-24 season.
Okay, yeah. And next big trade up, probably the only significant fantasy piece is Winnipeg has bought into the Monahanaissance, and they went out and acquired Sean Monahan from Montreal. Current deployment, and looks like he tonight, unfortunately, didn't show up on the scoreboard. He's the 2C now between Perfetti and Ehlers, and also on power play one on a pretty good unit on a team that's I won't say the rolling, but it's good to see Winnipeg go out there and get another 2C after history has kind of cursed them in that position with Brian Little and trading for Paul Stastny one season, the PLD trade. Like, they just can't keep a 2C on that team. So we'll see what Monahan does. It's definitely, I feel like, a more solid presence than what they've been rolling with. Kind of switching between Velarde, Perfetti. Wouldn't have been surprised if Nemestikov got a look up there. But as we all know, Nikolai Ehlers is the best player on that team. And Monahan's now playing with him. So, yeah, 60-point pace rest of the season.
I mean, the thing with him, though, with Monahan is he stepped right into that power play one role in Winnipeg. And we have Ehlers once again representing PP2. That poor guy just lives on power play two. He gets a sniff every now and then of power play one. And then anything time something new or shiny comes into the mix, we're going to have Nikolaj have a seat. We're going to try out Sean Monahan. But I think what's interesting for Winnipeg is they know what conference they play in. And center depth is so critical. If you're looking at where Winnipeg's positioned and looking to make a run, hopefully deep into the playoffs, they have an elite goaltender. They have pretty strong defense. That depth down the middle, when you're talking about the Edmontons, the Vegas Golden Knights, the Los Angeles Kings, the Vancouver Canucks, the Dallas Stars, all these teams are just elite down the middle in terms of depth. So I like that move for Winnipeg. And I mean, just look at how much shorter the two Montreal line of return assets is compared to the 2.5 lines it took to write in the Vancouver trade for all that they gave up for Lindholm.
Oh yeah, it just stinks that this season, man, there isn't a... I know in the past it was, I remember when they traded for Paul Stastny, it was like, oh man, Line A is going to have a good center to play with. This is going to be awesome. But now it's like, yeah, they got that 2C, but who's going to play with them? I mean, Ehlers, okay, cool. He was serviceable back in the day, but I don't know. They don't seem as deep to me as maybe years past.
And my goodness, like this, I guess even for fantasy managers, it's so important to monitor that cap situation in reality, because it really does drive and affect how your fantasy players can be projected to perform later. Sean Monahan, we talk so much about the Sean Monahanissance, but a huge part of it is the fact that he's on a $2 million cap hit for this season alone, and he's going to be a UFA at the end. So, of course, like, this is a not even grizzled veteran. This is just a veteran playing in his prime who is looking to secure the bag for the upcoming season afterwards. Didn't get a contract that was, you know, probably to his liking, probably the most juiciest contract he could have acquired. But my goodness, don't know if it's going to be the Jets, but it's certainly going to be a team willing to give him a far higher flyer than anything from the stinking seasons with the Flames that were performed with before. You got a feel for the players where they come off injury, they don't do so well, they don't do so hot, it happens near contract years, and it really can jeopardize their future earnings. And then look now at this man, waking up every day, he's on a team 3 points off the pace in the Central Division. He pounded himself onto power play one and stands a shot at line one now to guide the Jets. I mean, they're right there. I know I didn't mention them as one of those four teams, but can you imagine if that production rolls in and he plays hot in April, in May? This, man, guys, hop on the Monahanissance, man. This could...
See, this is, there we go. That's what I was calling when I said, like, he might have a career renaissance. Like, he's gotten over all those injuries. He really, you know, in Montreal, who else is going to do anything on that team? And I wasn't calling for like 60 plus points on Montreal, but definitely compared to his previous years where he's playing through injuries, he's going to be a big step up.
Well, good thing he's getting that deployment too, right? I mean, can you imagine the conversation with your significant other? We got traded. I'm going to a contender. Pack your bags, honey. We're going to Winnipeg.
Oh, man, yeah.
You better get that deployment.
I mean, oh, boys. Didn't Winnipeg actually somehow rank quite, let's call it mid-table in terms of preferred teams out of all the trade possible prospects across players? But it's not a Sharon Winnipeg moment here. But my goodness, it is an incredible... It's great to see when the jokes about the Monahanissance and any renaissance and like the comebacks, like they actually play out. Like if anything now, he's played hard, but he was on a team in Montreal that was never going to give him the minutes necessary for him to fully either compete for a cup, for anything of the like. They were a bubble playoff team at best. And then now instead, when you see this team... Yeah, I honestly believe in Hellebuck and his ability to carry anything. That is a Vasilevsky mold type of player that will carry anything and everything on his back. And now he's got a chance to genuinely contend and compete. I'm excited for him. I think it's going to be a great finish to the season. And he's just as incentivized as we are, all his fantasy owners, because he's playing for his freaking contract. And we're having him on the ride for our fantasy playoff finals too. Hell yeah.
So all of this talk about redemption arcs and players outperforming and going to rosier spots, Alan, we need to balance out the universe. Something bad must have happened in the NHL at some point. Thanos needs to snap his fingers.
This kind of hurts. This is a team in the West, man, that definitely I always keep an eye on. The Kings made a coaching change. They relieved Todd McClellan. Now they have Jim Heller as the interim coach. He was the assistant coach on the Kings last two seasons. Also has some history as assistant coach with the Islanders and Toronto. And just announced, I think yesterday, DJ Smith brought in as an outside assistant to the coaching staff. Good luck. This doesn't give me the warm and fuzzies, guys. Like, I mean, cool. He's probably familiar with the lineup as Todd was before he departed, but... Yeah, this makes me glad I jumped off the Fiala train. I don't know. Like, I mean, what are they going to do? Is he going to run everything back like business as usual? Is he going to put his touch on it and be like, you know what, man, I always wanted to try this and run with it. But I really think probably the underlying symptom here was maybe I shouldn't have run Cam Talbot into the ground the first half of the season.
And is absolutely, a little too old for that. I think what doesn't get mentioned as often is the NHL and that loser point, making those 3-point games, is huge. The variance from you getting the loser point obviously is better than you just losing outright, but look at several teams. Like, the Oilers have never... The Oilers have one loss in overtime. Okay. The Kings have 10. Can you imagine if any of those had flipped the other way, or even half of those had flipped the other way? LA's still above Edmonton. We're talking about a different slide instead of, you know, like a 3-5-2, like, catastrophic 9-game losing streak in between. So, you kind of feel in some ways that the Kings, if they were able to win so many and acquire so many points early, I think Matty K had a quote, great quote early on, where it's just bank those points early. I think Canucks are doing a heck of a lot than just banking early points at this point. But if the Kings were able to just flip a couple of, I guess, extra bounces or have a couple more lucky bounces, we might not even be having this conversation with Todd McClellan, you know, unfortunately, like, you know, staring with his nose pressed on the glass outside. Frank, sometimes it just doesn't work your way, and some spark change is needed. And unfortunately, it's way easier to flip a coach than it is to flip, you know, your true problems, like your PLDs. But you just got to do what you got to do to see what can eventually shake your roster, tip your roster. You can't run, you know, Talbot into the ground and expect him to get to do the same thing in and out. I mean, funny enough, the Oilers found that out a couple seasons back, too.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I guess from a timing perspective, if there is such a thing as good timing to fire your coach, I mean, they're coming off the All-Star break, and they play one game this week. I think it's on Friday, at home against the Oilers. So they're All-Star break, then they're at home, then they really dig into it next week. So, I mean, they'll have some time to spend with the new coaching staff. I mean, they need a spark big time, but week 18 through 22, the Kings actually play a lot of games. They play four games, three games, four games, three games, four games, all the way through week 22. They are currently a wildcard team, and they have between 1 and 3 games in hand on pretty much every team above them. So this is definitely doable for the Kings, but I mean, it's got to start with some stability on the back end. And again, we've seen that kind of exogenous shock of, you know, removing a coach really make an impact early in that move. So hopefully that kind of changes the Kings' direction over the next little while.
I definitely think this is not so much I personally or the Kings have any personal vendetta to eradicate and eliminate Todd McClellan so much as it is we are trying to galvanize the team in any way, shape, or form, and this is the easiest way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So before we wrap the show up, we want to spend a little bit of time on the weekend preview coming up. We're in week 17. We have actual hockey games being played right now, and we got a bunch of them being played between now and the rest of this week. And not the traditional way that we would see the week kind of shape itself up, but let's dig into this a little bit, Jay, and take a look at this week.
Yeah, thanks, Matty K. Okay, so rolling into this week 17 week end preview, it'll be a quick one, right? So in terms of analyzing the schedule, we're going to look for back-to-backs. Quickly off the top, there is no Friday-Sunday off night in terms of one team that can tag onto both. So no piggybacking and no double dipping. You're going to have to pick the teams that have the Fridays. You're going to pick the teams that have the Sundays. I would say choose your Friday team first to hopefully save a potential ad for your, week 18. If you are looking for that early Friday ad, look for Anaheim, Edmonton, Chicago, the New York Rangers, Minnesota, or Pittsburgh, right? We'll delve into some of these teams later, but those teams are the ones that play on the Friday. For the Sunday teams, there's Montreal, St. Louis, Vancouver, and Washington. Possible strategies if you want to leverage some back-to-backs. So the Friday, Saturday, there are two teams that play the back-to-back. There is Edmonton, and there's Pittsburgh, obviously, with Edmonton monitor that 16-game win streak. Probably Fogle is the player that jumps off my mind for potentially lightly owned in comparison. Ekholm might be another player that could be lesser owned in comparison. Most of the players and value is already gone in Edmonton, as we've mentioned, and beat that dead horse over before. Pittsburgh is a balmy 2-for-30 on the power play in January 2024. They are dead last in the NHL. However, as Alan mentioned tonight, they have scored twice on the power play, so maybe that all-star break truly was a refresher, and hopefully it's a potential sign of a turnaround. So look on to Pittsburgh. As we mentioned previously in the episode already, they just got Puljujärvi, so maybe, hopefully, for you, Fantasy Manager, there's some line shuffling. I somewhat doubt that he's going to knock off Rust or Riley Smith, so... Anywho, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh and Edmonton is not the best, but they do play the Friday-Saturday back-to-back. Grab whomever in your league is available for those. In terms of the Saturday-Sunday back-to-back, there's four teams there. There's Vancouver, Washington, Montreal, and St. Louis. We talked about those two goals for Elias Lindholm in Vancouver. I mean, funny enough, with his two goals in one game, technically, if he keeps up this pace, he'll finish with 60 goals in 30 games to round off the Canucks season. We'll see. Man, this could be one of the most, you know, lucrative trades in, I guess, trade deadline history. Washington, speaking of goals and lucrative potential pickups, Dylan Strome is forever owned at 25% and forever seemingly going to occupy the Capitals' top goal scorer setup, so long as Ovechkin seems to, I don't know what's happening. 9 goals throughout the season so far. Really hope Ovi picks it up. But until then, Dylan Strome, 25% ownership, center only. He plays a back-to-back on the Week 17 weekend. Charlie Lindgren is still only 39% owned, with a back-to-back basically guaranteeing a single start. He should be a potential long-term hold, but at least definitely for the Week 17 weekend.
They've lost 5 straight. They got a...
Yeah, I was checking to see if Lindgren was in tonight. They're in a real slide. I hope that wasn't him, because right, that was not pretty.
Just to dip in between here, Jay, before we kind of get on to Montreal. But yeah, with Washington, it's such a tough... I can... You know, there's a number of guys that we could look at to stream that on the forward side, but they have just not been getting it done as a team behind the net recently. And like every game that they've been playing too, it's not just that they're losing. They're letting in, you know, 4, 5, 6, 5, 3, 5. It's a bit of a gong show back there right now. So if you need volume, they're going to give up the shots. So, I mean, if volume counts in your league, as Jay said, stream on. But if it's a rates only league, you know, GAA and save percentage, we might pump the brakes on that just a tiny bit. Volume, absolutely.
Speaking of goalies, for back to Edmonton, Calvin Pickard.
Oh, man.
If you need a goalie start, make it so.
I'm going to say this too. I didn't necessarily expect the Caps to be this top heavy concentrated in terms of scoring, but beyond, yeah, Wilson, Ovi, barely, right? Like Ovi normally is far and away by streets and streets anyone else and any other Capital. But aside from Carlson, Wilson, and Ovi, it's been tough, right? That's why we've been pumping Dylan Strome so often. It's not that he's been incredible. He's 25% ownership, probably worth, you know, exactly where he should be, but just chasing the schedule, I guess we take him. Charlie Lindgren's,
he's been the better goalie. Like, Kemper started tonight, which explains the embarrassment.
Yeah, it's so hard, especially with goaltenders in the past, that especially, I guess, Kemper is the classic example of the glass cannons, that they play well, and then they get injured. And so your lingering memory is that goaltender sitting on your IR plus, if only those beautiful 6 letters and 2 words, if only they were healthy, then... what could have been, or what could it be? The only problem is you're always stuck in fantasy land, literally playing NHL fantasy with these guys, because they just never stay healthy enough on the ice to play and manifest that reality into existence. And frick, man, this sounds so depressing for Darcy Kemper.
Well, they're just like, they're just not a very fantasy relevant team this year, which is a really weird thing to say about the Capitals, because they've been a fantasy relevant team for like 15 years. ever since Ovi's been on the roster, 17 years. But I mean, reality's reality. I know Ovechkin's not been himself this year, but Kakupful scoring, there's not a player on that team inside the top 100. Not a soul. And in my Bangers Cats, it's worse. So other than a few little pockets of production, like an Oshie 4-game burst or something, there's been nothing. I think if anything, the whole team's been a trap in terms of fantasy players thinking you're going to be getting, there's a lot of people that invested heavy capital. Ovechkin's excluded from this conversation. We know what people paid. We know what he's done. But John Carlson was drafted as well. Like, there's lots of players on this team that had some expectations. And right now, they're delivering nothing of value to most fantasy GMs. So they're the perfect example of stream them for the schedule and have zero attachment to whatever they do. If TJ Oshie scores you 2 goals on Sunday, say thank you very much, TJ Oshie, and fire him.
See you next time.
Yes, that's right.
Point of note, too, with Ovi and all that mention, I think he got another goal tonight. So maybe this is the turnaround when it starts to heat up the second half. Russian machine don't break for second half of seasons. Who knows? This is uncharted territory here, listeners. Honestly, we're sitting here with you too, preaching, hoping. He's on power play one. He's on power play two. He's got the run. He's still in the office. Not sure why he's doing nothing with it. But I digress. We're going to head back. So two last teams, right? We're talking about Montreal. So with Monahan's trade, there's now opened up access in power play one. It looks like it's Tanner Pearson that's joined it. Tanner Pearson's at 0% ownership. He averages 13 minutes a night. Anyways, you're Slavkovsky. You're grabbing purely for deployment. It's not because they are necessarily league winners.
Oh, the shit. Slavkovsky got at least one goal tonight. He made the box score.
Pull him up two. Shortly. Yeah. And
yeah, he had two
goals
tonight.
Yeah,
two tonight, three in his last two.
Well, people can heat up at the right times, and yes.
Don't look under the hood. Don't look under the hood, but he got two goals tonight.
Yeah, no peeking under
two the hood. Two goals just tonight, equaling the Caps all by himself in the game. And yeah, so my goodness, you're Slavkovsky. Who knew the Monahanissance was the only thing getting in his way of becoming fantasy relevant for you, fantasy owner? So snag him when he's around. And again, they're the team that plays the ring around the rosy and that big daffodil together with the goaltenders. Look who's going to get the start more than anything. Caden Primo, Jake Allen. But Sam Montembeau's got to be the guy right now at 26% ownership. He's the highest ownership of all their goalies, which is hilarious. There's no must own, but it's a must own of the starters. Grab him. Montreal has back-to-back, so hopefully he takes at least one of them. And last team is St. Louis, right? Just pumped two names here, Braden Schenn, Colton Parayko. They're both getting line one, or at least line one D1 / line one power play one or power play two. Colton Parayko's one guy that has definitely made it work with his, what, I think it's triple digit blocks at the moment. So definitely, he's definitely an asset worthwhile if you're counting just a bangers league. But in specifics, he's getting power play one deployment at the moment. But I can't tell if that's because Justin Fulk's out right now or if that will continue. If you're a Krug owner, this might be very concerning that even in Justin Fulk's injury-riddled timeline, he still doesn't get unfettered access to the power play one and the quarterback deployment there. So Krug owners, beware. And Parayko owners, smash, give yourself a pat on the back. And, maybe if he retains that deployment onwards, this is not just a pickup, but definitely a hold, especially with Falk's situation ironing out. And we're just going to round it off with some potential streamers based on these setups. Other guys too, Ilya Mikheyev, Vancouver. He's got what, left wing or right wing eligibility? He's 4% owned. You're really grabbing him for the line one deployment with Pettersson and Lindholm. Then we have Connor McMichael on the Washington Capitals. He's not 1% ownership, but now he's centering the second line with Patches and Oshie. Shen, we mentioned as well. He's got 6 points in the last 7 games, but again, he gets a power play 2-time. And I guess I'll throw it over to Alan for some goalie streamers to round up.
Yeah, I mentioned Pickard earlier, but a couple other guys to keep an eye on: Joel Hofer in St. Louis, probably sees Montreal, and then Casey DeSmith in Vancouver. We'll either see Detroit or Washington. Both teams, I think Vancouver can dispatch pretty easily. But that's going to go ahead and do it for everything tonight. Anything we didn't mention or you just have questions about, feel free to hit us up on Twitter or the Discord. All that stuff's in the show notes. Good night, everyone, and good luck, and give it a better than Kucherov effort.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Can't wait to do it again.
We'll pick you up later.